Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, I'm enjoying a delicious Death Valley orange cream soda, a taste of the Old West.
Okay.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, since we're not getting any advertising dollars for that little plug, I don't like it very much.
Okay, well, let's try it again. Hey, dude, I'm drinking the worst cream soda I've ever had. It tastes, you could imagine, it tastes like the stench of Dale Talon's pen after writing all those checks. And it's called Death Valley Orange Cream Soda.
Okay.
Yeah, delightful little candy shop.
Yes.
That we visited before the podcast to get our adrenaline going.
That's right.
So we need a sugar high because there's just not enough stuff happening in Teal Town.
Dude, we're officially at the beginning of the Jim Vandermeer era.
This has been a shocking week, dude. Really.
It has.
And we're not talking about Jim Vandermeer. We all know what we're talking about here. We have something shocking happen today for maybe some of you, dude. You know, and the shocking thing is me drinking an orange cream soda.
Shocking enough.
Dude, so much to talk about. Where do we start, dude?
I think we start at the top with the massive number one shocking event. The thing none of us ever called was not even a hint on Twitter in an age where there's hundreds of tweets a day of rumors and TSN and USA Today people and everybody saying this could happen, that could happen. And no one called Danny Heatley to the Minnesota Wild for Martin Havlat straight up. It just happened out of thin air. Poof. And he was gone, like Kaiser Soze.
Same with the Brent Burns trade.
Yeah.
I mean, all the Sharks moves have been severely off the radar,
mm-hmm.
like Bermuda Triangle mm-hmm. off the radar.
Right.
There's been a lot of really interesting, dare we say, exciting stuff happening. But the Danny Heatley thing, when I saw that, I was so stunned that I almost stopped functioning for a few minutes. Like, I couldn't believe that it happened. And I have to say, it's not because I'm broken up emotionally about Danny Heatley no longer being on this team, and we'll get more into that as we go, but it was so stunning that a move like this happened out of thin air. I mean, I guess we should expect anything from Doug Wilson.
At this point.
I mean, the Dan Boyle move, totally mm-hmm. No rumors about that, unexpected. The Joe Thornton trade,
mm-hmm.
how shocking that was. And now here we are with Danny Heatley being shipped to the Minnesota Wild straight up from Martin Havlat, dude.
Yeah. I was gobsmacked as well. It was one of those things where I had to go and just read the news sort of over and over on TSN to try and figure it out. You know, and those of you who follow us on Twitter may have read some of my tweets. I was not complimentary of the deal when I first heard of it. I think maybe my views have softened in the ensuing days. But, I retain my position that if you look at the value or the scoring production of Danny Heatley versus Martin Havlat, it's not really a contest. Heatley is a higher producing player in terms of points.
Over the course of his career, that is true.
I don't think there's any way, but a lot of people on Twitter and on our post on comments on their post, people have been trying to put or have successfully put a sort of a bright, a rosy glow to some aspects of the trade, which, I have to listen to, I have to consider. So I don't think this is just a purely dumb move by the Sharks. I think this is something that if you look at it in certain light, it can make sense. It does make sense in certain light.
I try to break it down like this now with a little bit of perspective, dude. Danny Heatley was being paid to be a first line winger,
mm-hmm.
and he was playing on the second line, sometimes the third line, and producing like a second line player.
Right.
So why not go out and get a real second line winger
mm-hmm.
and pay him $2.5 million less to do the same job.
Right. And my response to that might be, everybody can have a bad year sometimes. And
sure.
If you want to judge Danny Heatley not by his entire career, but only by the last 82 games, you can do that, but you're going to be hitting some pretty big swings when it comes to some guys. You know, you look at a guy like Brad Boyes, who had 40 goals one year and then sort of dropped off the table. If you were only looking at the 40 goals, you'd say this guy's a punk. But if you looked at his whole career, you'd say, man, maybe that 40-goal season was a bit of an outlier.
Right.
And if you look at Danny Heatley's career, 26 goals is a bit of an outlier for him. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him put up 35 or 40 in Minnesota next year. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, I guess not. You know, when you're looking at his career numbers and his career success, but watching the guy last year, you know, we were almost begging him to find the net at times. 26 goals, his lowest goal output in his since his, you know, rookie season, which, you know, of course he won the Calder,
mm-hmm.
but his rookie season, 26 goals. Now he's, you know, gone from 50, 50, 41, 39, 39, 26.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty severe drop off. You know, I think what Doug Wilson claims to be looking for here is speed, and Havlat definitely has the edge on that over Danny Heatley. He's
right.
Not known for his speed. Havlat is a better two-way forward, a better even-strength player. Heatley, I think when we got him, we had dreams of him being just a juggernaut on the power play
right.
with Joe Thornton. And the truth is, dude, Tom McClellan wasn't even playing him
right.
with Joe Thornton.
That didn't really happen.
No. Because the coach, for some reason, felt like
that
it wasn't working.
That chemistry wasn't there.
So if that's the case, and you have to feel like, you know, I don't, they can say this isn't about Danny Heatley all they want. I do not buy it. I think this was an opportunity to get rid of Danny Heatley because they feel like it's not working. The
right.
Heatley experiment, it happened, and there was a degree of success,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't put us over the top. And
yeah.
and now we've moved on, dude.
And the one thing I looked at, for those that didn't read my post on it, is that if you look at next year and the salary cap situation for next year and the kind of players that are going to be needing new contracts next year, we're talking Brent Burns and Logan Couture.
Right.
And if you have the Danny Heatley contract still on the books, the Sharks, you know, it's hard to predict where the cap's going to go, right? Some years it didn't go up hardly at all, and then this year it went up by $6 million. But assuming that the cap doesn't go anywhere next year, which probably isn't a very fair assumption, the Sharks are going to be really tight up against the cap next year because you're going to have, you know, Healy's still making money, allegedly, or, you know, Havlat's still making money, and Marlowe and Thornton and Boyle and all these guys still making their big dollars, and Logan Couture is going to be due for a big raise, and you would hope that, you know, given that the Brent Burns experiment is a successful one, that he would also be on the roster. And if you're carrying another top-heavy contract, that's just less money to give to Brent Burns
yeah.
and less money to give to Logan Couture, who
it's
you're going to have to
pay. It's a great point, and you know that was a factor in this deal.
It had to have been.
Of course it is. And that's why, you know, we've been speculating how they're going to use this extra money. Will they not use it this year and let it sit? Because, I mean, the Sharks really need to get, according to Cap Geek and sort of where I'm looking at here, you know, the Sharks had never been one to carry, you know, a full complement of players. You know, they usually have one extra guy. So now they've got $6.7 million to really bring in two more guys.
Right.
I think one of those guys is Ben Ferriero, who will be making under,
yeah.
you know, 700 grand.
Right.
So now you've got $6 million here sitting around. And you really need another third line forward. You're not going to give that money. Here, please take this Jamie Langenbrunner and come to San Jose. But do you expect that the Sharks are going to investigate or already have a real serious lead on bringing in maybe a high-priced role player who has one more year left on his deal?
It could happen. But the problem is that if it's a trade, that means you have to give up something to get him.
Yeah, but if you've got an expensive player that, you know, maybe it's not fitting into a team's plans, or I don't know. I've been trying to come up with some ideas here of people, and we can get into this later. I've got a few names, but, you know, some guys who might be able to help out the team. The other thing that I thought was really funny about this is Doug Wilson's kind of gushing over Havlat.
Mm-hmm.
When same thing he said about Burns. When you see a guy who is, you know, you want, who becomes available, you need to act on it.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Wilson, you could have had Martin Havlat back when you traded for Mark Bell. Do you remember that three-way trade?
That's right. Oh, okay. So Havlat
went to the Blackhawks in the three-way deal that brought Mark Bell and a 12-pack of Keystone to San Jose for, Hennessy and Tom Pricing.
Oh, man.
You know? I mean, so how funny is that?
Yeah.
Like that Havlat now linked for a second time to the Sharks.
Right.
Now, maybe, you know, I don't know, but if they were getting Pricing and Hennessy, couldn't we have just left the Blackhawks out of it and had Havlat 5 years ago?
Yeah, could have.
Pretty funny. I mean, like, I just think that that's interesting. I mean, he might be putting a little Wonka coating on this to make it sound a little bit better. Dude, tell us a little bit about Martin Havlat.
He's a quick player. He's a very speedy player. He seems to be the second line guy, like you said earlier. He's not... I think one of the maybe the thing is that Havlat might be one of those guys that could really, if I want to put a rosy glow on this trade, he could be one of those guys that really flourishes in a second line role. Havlat, in my mind, was clearly the best offensive player that Minnesota had last year. I think it was
an all-star.
I think he was tied for number one in points on that team.
Right.
But on the Sharks, you know, he might be third, fourth, somewhere in that range, right? Behind Thornton, behind Marlowe, behind Couture. I mean, Klobe put up a bunch of points last year too. So, you know, this might be a situation where Martin Havlat doesn't have to be the guy that carries the team on his back in terms of point production. He might get some easier minutes.
Right.
And as some people have pointed out, and I've read on the web, that in terms of quality of competition numbers, Havlat was fairly sheltered last year on Minnesota. But the fact is, he might still be... He's not going to be the key player to shut down on the Sharks this coming year, right? He's going to be he's going to be part of a cast of thousands that you need to take care of.
He's either going to be skating on the wing with Marlowe and Thornton or skating on the wing with Pavelski and Klo. Clearly, to me, this signals the switch of Logan Couture to wing. Doesn't that say that to you, dude?
You know, that's to be seen. I guess Pavelski's a better face-off man, so you would think Pavelski would move to center on the second line, and then Couture would move to the wing.
Could we see a Marlowe, Thornton, Couture top line, dude?
It's possible.
Hoo-hoo, doggy.
That'll be fun, huh?
Mommy.
Yeah.
That would be pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then you're throwing out, you know, Klo, Pavelski, and Havlat. I don't know, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they're going to keep Havlat and Marlowe together and fight speed, you know, speed on speed together.
Yeah.
Or break them up. But it gives them a little more options. He's a little bit more of a versatile toy. We'll see. The jury's going to be out on this until we see who's raising the cup.
That's right.
If the Sharks are still stuck at the conference finals, then, you know, this was sort of for nothing.
And I know this is a columnist that maybe not many listeners or Sharks fans usually read when it comes to the Sharks, but Tim Kawakami, as you pointed out to me today, had some pretty good points about Healy. One thing he asks is, what was the best thing that you remember about Danny Healy in a Sharks uniform? And, you know, for me, my first reaction was hat trick against Columbus, which I believe was his first game at the Tank.
Right.
And it's hard to think of a whole lot of other really highlight, great, amazing games that he's had in the time period since. It could be just a function of my memory, but Kawakami makes a good point here. I mean, this is a guy who is making a lot of money. He was here to be an out-and-out superstar scorer, and for whatever reason, injuries probably played a part. He never really quite made it there, despite playing with one of the best playmakers in the league. So you could make the case that Healy was just not the right fit. It just never really clicked. And I think you saw some, you know, sort of oblique references to that point when the GMs and other people talked about the trade, especially, you know, regarding Havlat. I think sort of on both sides, well, some players don't always fit in well on their team, you know, sort of a weird thing.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Havlat has not been a good fit in Minnesota. And if we think back to 2 years ago, how Havlat I mean, Havlat was really good for the Chicago Blackhawks the year that they went to the conference finals. I think he was their leading scorer. And that was the second year in a row, I think he was their leading scorer. And he was outstanding. And it was almost a given that he was going to come back. And then they signed Marian Hossa instead.
Right.
And he felt, remember, he was, I think he, you know, tweeted some sort of angry message.
Or his agent did, or something.
He was really angry. Mm-hmm. Very bitter and sort of ended up in Minnesota almost kind of out of spite. Like it was mm-hmm. not a good situation and he's never been a great fit there. So you know, it's not out of bounds to say this guy, you know, he has put up multiple high 60 point seasons, even a 77 point season. Right. You know, we could see him be very, very productive here.
And despite what we may have guessed at or hinted at, it doesn't seem like there's any truth to the idea that Danny Heatley was any sort of trouble in the locker room. He wasn't. It was not that he wasn't liked by players, by coaches, or the media, or anybody. It just maybe he wasn't liked by the coaches because of his performance or his output as a player.
Zero goals in the conference finals, as Cal Comey wrote in his column, zero in 2 years. That's I know he's hurt. But that's another problem too,
right?
Yeah, when we need you the most, your body's just not able to hang in there, dude. So, shocking turn of events. One more thing I want to ask you, and then we're going to move on to some other stuff. Do you think Doug Wilson is good at picking the moment to get rid of a guy? I mean, if you look at past record, we just talked about Tom Pricing.
Yeah. He basically dropped straight out of the league after we traded him.
The right time to dump Tom Pricing.
Yeah.
Milan Mihalik.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And injury-ridden. He's missed 32 games over the last 2 years. He's had 67 points combined in the last 2 years. Ooh. I think he had that in a season in San Jose. Erhoff, bad.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Bad one.
Yeah.
Maybe not a talent dump as much a salary dump.
Right.
Craig Revay.
Yeah.
Got out of there at the right time, too. I mean,
Jonathan Chichu.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody could see that that was a problem. But, you know, when you're selling high, right? Don't you want to sell high, dude? Right. I'm no financial mastermind. But that might be a case here, and even though you're not even selling super high, you've still got some star value with Heatley. We'll see, dude.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Martin Havlat and Teal.
Yeah.
I mean, we wish Heatley the best, of course, and it's going to be interesting to see Setoguchi and Heatley both on the same team, but not at the Sharks.
Yeah, will they find some sort of magic combination?
Right.
It didn't really happen with any consistency here, so... No. But sometimes fresh start can rejuvenate some guys, and we'll certainly all be keeping an eye on it.
Well, the other player we haven't even mentioned yet, which was seemingly the major signing of July 1st, the first day of free agency, was the Sharks getting Michael Hanzus, who was a free agent, played last year with the Los Angeles Kings. So Michael Hanzus is making $2.5 million a year for 2 years. He's going to be that third line center. I talked to my friend who's a big Philly fan, certainly remembers Hanzus fondly when he was in a Philly uniform. He says, slow as hell, but great face-offs, great PK, you know, a good defensive player. And that seems to be the new mold that, you know, maybe we managed to see that Doug Wilson was going towards and going away from a scoring third line to a more traditional third line with defensive players, good checking players, and penalty killers.
Thank
and Michael
you.
Hanzus is that guy.
Thank you, sweet lordy of hockey. It's time for this switch, dude.
Yeah.
To really have a real third line and guys playing the roles that they should be playing. And we'll go back to Heatley for a second. I mean, Heatley bouncing around from the third to second line, he is so miscast.
Right.
I mean, he is a sniper. And if he's not cutting it, can be borderline useless. You know, that's not what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
So you've got a guy in Hanzus. He knows what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good at what he does. I'm concerned about his lack of speed. But I am excited about his size and his presence out there. We could see him in front of the net on the power play at times. Real good penalty killer. Good pickup. It's a good pickup.
Yep. I said only last week that I didn't mind Michael Hanzus at all, so now my judgment is going to be put to the test here. We'll see if I mind Michael Hanzus.
I don't mind him. I just think that there were some better options, but unfortunately, either Doug Wilson wasn't interested or they were snapped up. Now, I was on pins and needles following the Maxim Talbot situation.
But we saw the writing on the wall when there seemed to be so many bidders for Max Talbot all on the East Coast, and he ended up going to Philly for 5 years in a contract that might have been voided.
It's been voided, but evidently they're going to work it out.
They're just going to fix it.
Hanzus, the big signal there is that they are going for a real third line. So if we look at Hanzus, good signing, good value for the money.
Yeah.
You look at what they tried to maybe add in Talbot.
Right.
I don't know if it was an either or, but I suspect they're still looking for that energy winger. I mean, Talbot plays a lot like Nickel in that he's sort of throws his body around like a crazy man.
Chirps and all that.
And he has a knack for scoring, big goals, as we saw when the Penguins made their run to the Cup. Will the Sharks be able to find, with this, now they're gobs of money, this third line winger? A physical third line presence that we saw Boston and Vancouver have so effectively, but we really didn't have. You're talking about replacing Kyle Wellwood.
Right.
With a more physical player. Kyle Wellwood's still unsigned, by the way.
Yep, he's still around. It's not out of the question, I guess.
No, I don't think it's out of the question, but I think it is be the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
The way they've been going. Dude, is this roster shaping up more like, we know Doug Wilson is not afraid to be an admirer of other teams. Yeah. Is this looking like a love letter to Vancouver at this point?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Like, you've got your Mason Raymond in Martin Havlat, speedy winger, good two-way player.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got, we saw big centers for Vancouver, LaPierre is 6'2", 207, Malhotra is 6'2", 220. We had, who was our, I guess you had Pavelski. He's got decent size, but,
not quite that big.
Couture doesn't quite have that size.
Nope, not yet.
Now you're kind of matching it with, one of the bigger centers. Hanzus, 6'4", 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
I'm adding a lot of size here. Vandeveer's big guy.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even talked about him yet. Brent Burns is a really big guy. So,
seems clear that, trying to find the winning formula, right?
Right. Well.
Well, and as somebody put, I think, to us in a tweet or maybe on the blog, seems like Doug Wilson chose, in the poll question, Doug Wilson chose overhaul and not retool.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah.
Which took almost all of us by surprise. I applaud it. I applaud his effort. If he had just thrown out the same team, I think we all would have been a little bit uneasy.
Right.
I don't think we expected this much of a, paint job.
Right.
But.
And we'll talk about other moves later on in the show, but just treading water a lot of times doesn't mean that you're in a better position. A lot of times treading water means you're losing position versus other teams.
Right.
So you did mention Jim Vandermeer. Let's talk a little bit about Jim Vandermeer. You think he's going to be in the lineup every night? $1 million, 1 year. So even less than Ken Huskins was making last year. Ken Huskins did actually sign in St. Louis. And so
for $1 million.
So he took a pay cut.
Basically, well, you're basically getting, you could have had one or the other for $1 million.
And they chose Jim Vandermeer. So you think Vandermeer is actually going to play, or you think he's going to be sort of the Huskins role, maybe play a little bit, but most of the time he'll be riding the pine as the seventh defenseman?
I think he is going to play initially. I think he will play.
Okay.
And be paired with Demers on the third pairing for, the majority of the season. And then we'll see what's going on with Justin Braun. We know how high they are on Justin Braun. I don't know if a combination of Demers and Braun is the right combination to be playing against teams third and fourth lines. They're going to be very physical. I think those guys are going to kind of get beat up. So that's what Vandermeer is going to be there to do.
Right.
Be that physical guy. He'll fight. And I think, I can't remember if I put on the blog. I think I did, or somewhere. you know, his fight against Milan Lucic. You know, if you're willing to fight Lucic, you're okay in my book. Yeah. You're and he held his own.
That's a tough draw.
Yeah. And you know, that's better than Ken Huskins, anything he can offer. Takes a little pressure off Dougie Murray, maybe.
Right.
To not have to be the guy back there. I don't mind it. I don't think he's going to really...
Another move we never saw coming, of course.
No. He's replacing hamburgers, right? I mean, replacing hamburgers. So, I don't know what this means in terms of Justin Braun's nightly draw for the lineup. I suspect it means he'll be either a scratch or in Worcester, dude.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about other Sharks that have left?
Yeah,
we want
to go absolutely.
So we saw Ben Eager leave. I think we both thought Ben Eager might be re-signed, but you made the point that, you know, the Sharks weren't able to trust Eager during the postseason at certain times. You know, he had that famous, you know, sort of meltdown versus Vancouver, which was funny, including trash-talking Roberto Luongo after bashing him into his own net, which I appreciated. But
what was funny? The four penalties and the three power play goals as a result? That was what was funny, dude?
No, I don't think that was the funny part. It was the trash-talking after he scored, like, the goal that brought the Sharks within five or whatever it was.
I enjoyed Ben Eager in the regular season. He sucked against the Kings. You couldn't play him against Detroit, and he lost his mind against Vancouver in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Totally lost it, and he didn't see the ice again. They gave him $1.1 million, 3 years. No thanks.
Right. So Edmonton, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have fun.
So Scotty Nicholl joined. We mentioned that Scotty Nicholl joined Huskins in St. Louis. He got
$600,000.
So we saw some stuff on Working the Corners today. It's impossible not to root for Scott Nicholl.
Yeah, yeah.
We wish him the best.
Of course. I think that's a decent pickup. You know, if he can get healthy again. But, you know, he's 36.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's old fart like us, dude.
Right. He's old.
You know, he's really old.
Yeah.
And creaky knees.
Super old.
Ooh.
Ancient.
So, I don't know. But, you know, St. Louis plays a physical style. He'll probably fit in pretty well there. Like Ken Huskins. Real physical.
And we saw Mayers go to Chicago.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I didn't expect that.
They also signed Daniel Carcillo. So, they've got a fourth line now of Carcillo, Mayers, and Big John Scott.
Man.
Yeah, they were asking, the beat writer was asking for name suggestions for their line, and I suggested the Healthy Scratch in May line. He didn't retweet it. I was a little disappointed by that, but I definitely smell a playoff meltdown amongst that line, too.
Yeah, you can see that. And Ian White finally signed, and it was surprising because the first day, maybe we should sort of roll this into a larger, you know, July 1st discussion. It seemed like July 1st was, there was some crazy signings, right? We saw some money being thrown around that we never would have expected.
Well, mostly by the Florida Panthers.
That's true. But Ian White got signed for, he took a pay cut. And he went to Detroit, and so that was a bit of a surprising signing. I'm looking at TSN's free agent tracker here, and you look at some of these. James Wisniewski got 6 years and an average cap hit of $5.5 million. This guy was traded for a second round draft pick last year.
He had a monster year last year. I mean, a really huge year, but not that much better than Ian White. I mean, not, you know, $4 million better.
Right. Yeah, so
it was a little strange. You wonder, you know, why it was it lack of market activity or the fact that he was, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, I don't think Calgary went to the playoffs the year before last, did they?
No, this was the first time he'd ever been to the playoffs.
So now that you've tasted the sweet nectar of the playoffs, you know, maybe you don't want to go to Florida and sign for big bucks. You know, he might have wanted a chance to win it all. I mean, by all we know, he's a really super competitor. We saw he is.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit's got a great shot.
Oh, yeah.
So, and you've got a chance now to maybe play with Nick Lidstrom.
Yeah. You take that chance if you can, right?
Sure. I don't fault him. And I think, you know, this is a segue into Thomas Vokoun. I mean, Thomas Vokoun took...
No money. I was shocked at that.
Like goodwill. You know, he is donating his time to play in Washington. I mean, what a steal, dude. What a steal, dude.
All right, dude, I got to get some emails. Let's go to Mason. With the ridiculous amounts of money being thrown around this offseason, I think DW has backed himself into a corner now. I think we all love the Burns deal, assuming we sign him to an extension. Here's DW's problem now. If he signs the extension now, he might overpay and not know how Burns' season plays out. If he waits until June and Burns has a crazy statistical year, he has to pay even more. What's your feelings on when to sign him and for how much? Thanks, dudes. Crazy offseason. So, Mason, you're right that there was some crazy money thrown around, like to Christian Ehrhoff, who's going to make like $10 million in real money next year, and James Wisniewski, who, based on 1 year, is making $5.5 million for 6 years. But you saw some guys not make a lot of money, like Ian White. So I think you could have a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. Not everybody took an insane amount of money. There were some guys that you were really, I was frankly a little surprised at how little they got. So, and Ian White falls into that category.
I think what Mason might be talking about is that, you know, Burns, we said if he was a free agent, you know, he would have been, he would have gotten that Wisniewski deal, if not more, you know, from somebody. He's just a better.
But we saw Pitkinen get 4.5. We saw.
Well, Pitkinen took a little bit of a price cut, I think.
But we saw Thomas Caverly sign today, and he didn't get, I mean, he didn't get the amazing, crazy money, right?
Yeah. I think the guys who were younger at a bit of a premium got the money, and that's where maybe the problem is with Burns. He's 26, I think. He could, next year, playing with Dan Boyle, playing with the Sharks. I mean, last year he had 46 points, right? That's not out of bounds. He could have a 50-point year if he's, you know, keeps producing the way he's capable of and the Sharks have a really great season. So what happens? I mean, what's the timing on this? Do you think the Sharks are going to strike early and extend him, or are they going to wait and do it after they see some of the results?
I think they're going to wait till after you see some of the results because, you know, we saw the chemistry thing with Heatley, right? You can't re-sign him way too early because you don't know how he's going to mesh with the coaching staff. You don't know how he's all going to fit into the system. I think it's one of those things where you see, you know, Doug Wilson supposedly said that they're not going to re-sign players in the middle of the year until they do.
Until they sign Antti Niemi.
Or Matt Carl or any number of other people during the middle of the year. This could be a situation where Brent Burns could like have a Christmas present of a new contract with the Sharks. You know, he'll play for 20 to 25 games, and Doug Wilson says, yep, you're the guy we thought you were. You're meshing in with the team the way we thought you were. We're going to give you $5 to $6 million, and that's going to be roughly market rate for 3 to 4 years, which is the term that Doug Wilson seems to be willing to give. And you know what? I wouldn't feel too bad about that. I mean, that's the going.
What'd you say the term? What? How much?
$5 to $6 million.
Yeah.
For 3 to 4 years, and you know, Thomas Caverly is only making 4.25. You saw Yoni Pikkanen make 4.5. So even if you overpay Burns, you can't give him more than $6 million. He's not going to be able to, I don't think he can say, I'm definitely worth more than $6 million.
No,
unless he has 50 points.
I think
Christmas.
The market was set today, dude, when Keith Yandle signed his 5-year, $26.25 million deal.
Excellent point.
I think the market's been established. I think that you could say Yandle and Burns are comparable.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Yandle was a Norris finalist, something that Burns never been. So you could say Yandle is on the ups, is the ceiling for Burns.
So then 5.25, I think that's fair starting point. But I think you're right. This is going to drag out at least through the new year. But I'm looking at the Sharks contracts, and now that Heatley's gone, maybe his was considered to be the bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the bad contract on the Sharks? When's the last?
Joe Thorne, he's a bum.
Well, I mean, we've criticized contracts in the past that have ended up being, you know, Mark Edward Vlasic at 3.1. If he was on the market, you think he would have got more than that?
I think so.
You know, Havlat at 5, he's a 60-point second-line guy. He would have got 5 again from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Pavelski at 4. That's a great deal. Klo at 3.6.
That's a great deal.
That's a great deal. So, you know,
there's no bad deals anymore.
And looking at the, you know, the money that Brizgal have got.
Oh, God.
And then you see what the Sharks got Niemi for. He usually has pretty good timing on these things.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's something definitely to keep an eye on, but I think the Yandle signing today definitely.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a real key
helps,
point.
Yeah, set that that bar. And you know, I don't think you can put Drew Doughty, you know, whatever Doughty gets, whenever that happens, you know, that's going to be more.
It's not the same. Yeah.
And he's in a little bit of a different status, I think, of player.
I think so, too. So, dude, let's talk about winners and losers because we're already burned up quite a bit of time. Winners and losers of this free agency season, dude.
Okay. My winner, no question, hands down, for me, the Washington Capitals are the runaway winner. And they, you know, sealed it by getting Thomas McCoon to play for free, basically.
Mm-hmm.
What they did, the trade of Varlamov to get the Avalanche's first round pick.
I know. Crazy.
That was insanity.
Right.
To get a guy.
He was a restricted free agent. And as some people pointed out, if they signed him to an offer sheet for the same amount of money that Colorado ended up paying for him, they wouldn't have had to give up that first round draft pick.
Yeah.
In compensation. So, I mean, the Avalanche really screwed the pooch on that deal. Because, I mean, if the Avalanche are bad again this year, which is entirely possible.
Sure. Oh, I think you got to expect they're going to be.
Then they're going to give up a lottery pick for Varlamov.
Yeah, that's what they
did. Who couldn't start over Michael Neuvirth.
And a second rounder, dude.
And a second rounder.
So, Washington, this is what they did. For a guy who wasn't even going to play, Varlamov, who's going to Russia, right?
Right.
They were not going to keep him. They got Troy Brouwer, a really good third line player. They got Joel Ward, another really good third line
guy
player.
Guy we liked.
They got a top 10 goalie in the league in Thomas Vokoun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got Roman Hamrlik, a good depth defenseman, former number one pick. He knows how to play the role now. He's a number four guy.
Yeah.
He does well at that now. Jeff Halpern, good under the radar fourth line center.
Steady center.
They keep Brooks like, and they get the Avalanche's first and second round pick next year.
I know.
It's like Ocean's 11.
I know. Yeah.
They just ran away with Andy Garcia's money.
Yeah. They just took off the casino.
I hope I didn't ruin it for everybody. That, no question they're the winners, dude.
Yeah.
No question.
Well, I had to pick somebody else because I knew you were going to take Washington. So you know who I picked?
Who?
I picked the Detroit Red Wings because they got Ian White for cheap. And they made a bunch of deals. They got their fourth line guys locked up again. They didn't make any bad deals. It was funny. I was reading Twitter and they said, you know what? The teams that didn't do anything today, meaning July 1st, those are the teams that won. Were the teams that didn't do anything because they didn't do anything stupid because there were so many crazy ones. You know, Patrick Eves gets $1 million a year. Drew Miller is making $825,000. Of course, they re-signed Lidstrom and they get Ian White. So my Commodore for $1 million. Detroit made
solid moves.
They made no mistakes. Another one I would say is Chicago. I thought Chicago did really well too, which is, you know, again, bad for us. They got Ben Eager, but they also got...
And they got Jamal Mayers.
They got Jamal Mayers, but they got Sean O'Donnell, a depth defenseman. I thought one of the best signings may have been Andrew Burnett. Andrew Burnett is quietly a really good scorer. He scores a ton of goals right around the net. He has great shooting percentage because he always just bangs them in from the crease. Andrew Burnett's a great pickup for them. And as you mentioned, they got Dan Carcillo. So, you know, Chicago and Detroit both avoided all of the Tiger traps that a lot of other teams fell into.
They got Steve Monitor, too.
And Steve Monitor.
So they made some solid supporting cast additions.
Right.
And they got rid of Brian Campbell.
They didn't go nuts.
Right.
And they got rid of Brian Campbell, like you said. Right. So some teams did fall into the Tiger trap. You mentioned Florida, so I take that's going to be your big loser?
No. I think Florida, first of all, they had to get to the floor, and they signed the best collection of second and third line players anyone could hope to want.
I guess.
I don't know, dude. I think Talon was saying they want to make this a fun place to play. They want to make it a good locker room. You know, like what they did with Nathan Horton. If you don't want to be here, they want you to get out. Mm-hmm. So the only reason why all those guys wanted to come to Florida was I'm thinking of a number. It's $4 million a year because that's basically what they gave everybody, not named Marcel Gotch,
right,
who signed there. I mean, you've got Scotty Upshaw, Kopechki, Ed Jovanovski,
Fleischman,
Sean Bergenheim, yeah. Matt Bradley. I mean, that's a really good third line.
Right.
And a defenseman who, if he's healthy, could probably play 18 minutes in Jovanovski. I don't not like any of those players. I just think they're all grossly overpaid and in contracts that will be mostly immovable.
Yeah, in a year.
In a year.
Or if they aren't already.
So I don't know what they were doing, but I'm not going to say that they're my loser.
Really? Who's your loser?
Dude, I'm just going to go for the biggest sad trombone, like the biggest wah-wah.
Yeah.
You get a franchise in Winnipeg and you do nothing? You sign Tanner Glass? Dude, do you have the Baba Booey?
I don't. I'm sorry, dude.
Dude, it's kind of like, I was just, I don't know. I didn't want him to go crazy, but like something? You've got your fans there. They're all wearing their Jets jerseys and nothing happens?
Yeah.
I was kind of like, well. And my other big loser, and we can debate this a little bit, is Nashville. Nashville, they lost Steve Sullivan. They buy out J.P. Dumont. They trade away Cody Franson, who, you know, I know some people think he's just sort of a one-dimensional guy, but he's sort of like their answer to Jason Demers.
Mm-hmm.
Plays a lot of minutes. He had almost 30 points last year. They gave him away to Toronto so that they could get rid of, you know, Matthew Lombardi's scrambled eggs. And they took back Brett Lebta, who was basically the Antichrist in Toronto last year.
Yeah.
They hated him. Hated him so much. I love reading a blog post from a Toronto blog in all caps says, "Thank you, God, Brett Lebta is gone." Like, that's their big addition.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. And they signed Nicholas Bergfors. And then someone's trying to spin that as being like a great depth move. What? And then they screw up their restricted free agent offer sheets.
Yeah.
Loser.
Yeah.
Ba ba booey. I give them a thumbs down. Who's your loser, dude?
Well, I went more like the big teams that maybe made bad signings as opposed to not making any good ones. I'm a little bit of a toss-up. Florida, you're right. They kind of had to get to the floor and they want to make a bit of a splash. I might actually have to go with either Philly or Buffalo. They're sort of tied for me. I don't like the Aerohoff deal. I think 10 years is too much. I think they paid him too much for too long. I guess he's only making $1 million the last 3 years so they can get around the cap. But $4.5 million for Villalano. I mean, the guy had like 30 points last year. $4.5 million for Villalano, I thought was just like one of the head scratchers of the day. And maybe the other head scratcher, which happened before July 1st, was the Ilias Brizgalov signing. I thought that was a terrible deal too for Philadelphia. So I don't know which one I have to say is worse. And they signed Jaromir Jagr for $3 million, which I don't see how that's ever going to work. But
yeah, you want to create a better dressing room, so you're going to bring Jagr and Pronger together.
Yeah, good thinking.
Oh.
Yeah, so I guess I might have to go. I guess I might just have to go Buffalo because I think the Villalano deal is just not good.
Yeah, I also in that case I applaud them for trying to do something. Now maybe this guy went a little Mark Cuban and like went a little bananas. I really thought that might have been where Brad Richards was going to end up because he was going to offer him like
$12 million,
something nuts. To just get it done because he's so desperate. But don't forget the good trade for Robin Regier.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Buffalo's... I think they've solidified themselves as a playoff team again. I'm more up on Buffalo than I have been in past off seasons where they just sat there going, "Oh, we're sad. Yeah. We're here again. Darcy Regier and Lindy Ruff back for more punishment.
Oh, we lost in the first round.
Oh, again." We'll just sign Martin Gerber. Everything's going to be fine.
Well, dude, I don't know if we could have asked for a more eventful first week of free agency. Two major deals of the Sharks since the draft day, the loss of Danny Heatley. I think the rest of the summer is going to be pretty quiet in comparison, but
it's not quiet. The Sharks re-signed Thomas Greiss today.
Oh, you're right. Things are still going big guns.
What? A 2-year deal for Greiss.
What?
Yeah, I am so confused by that too.
I don't think he's a bad player, but they got 7 goaltenders in the system or something. They got a million goalies.
So
I guess they're not. I think it's an insurance move because they don't know if Staloff's going to be healthy.
I guess, but do you think that has any? I mean, I wrote on the blog. I said, you know, I don't think any of the Sharks who don't have no movement, no trades. Maybe they should go to Home Depot and buy some moving boxes. Like, you know, any of them could be leaving at this point.
Right.
You don't know what Doug Wilson, you know, when your phone rings, are you jumping every time? You know, maybe you should put like, you know, Doug Wilson's number on a special ringtone. So when it happens, you know that you should run and hide.
Yeah, I mean, Frankie D asked in an email, like, who are the Sharks going to trade for? And the answer is, we have no freaking idea.
Well, I do have a couple names, and maybe this is a way to end it.
Okay.
You know, guys who maybe are going to be available, you know, a player that I know you enjoyed so much 2 years ago that you put him on your fantasy team, David Clarkson of New Jersey.
I like David Clarkson.
He had a bad year last year in New Jersey, an energy third line winger, kind of a Scott Hartnell type guy. I don't think maybe they're looking to get rid of him, but
probably not as skilled as Scott Hartnell. I would certainly take Scott Hartnell if he's available.
Sure. Well, that's another player I threw out there too. I tossed out the name Jason Chimera in Washington. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't see a job for him there anymore. You know, Ward and Brouwer kind of took his lineup spots. He's assistant captain over there. They may just be looking to move him. 1 year left on that deal too, dude. So, right. And it's less than $2 million. I mean, we could be in a situation where the Sharks are actually going to have $3 million of cap space going into the season. Like, yeah. So that they could actually make a move mid-year.
Yeah, find out which team screws the pooch and is looking to get rid of people.
And then add somebody. That wouldn't be too shocking either. Another name that we've heard linked to the Sharks before, and we know that, you know, he was kind of on the trade deadline last year, and then he signed an extension, is Chris Neal.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We were talking about Chris Neal.
You know, a guy, third-line guy, has some skill around the net, big guy, likes to fight. Put him on the third line with Michael Hontsuus. It might not set any speed records, but you certainly will look good size-wise.
Right.
So a few names to throw out there. I also wrote about Yannick Hansen from Vancouver. He looked good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're a little cap tight. You know, could we see Doug Wilson go sheet, dude?
They lost Torres, right?
They did lose Torres. Torres took, I think 1.8 to go to Phoenix.
So they didn't offer much, I guess, in Vancouver.
I guess not. So do you think an offer sheet could be in? I know we don't have the picks to do that, right?
Right. You have to have your own, and you can't even trade for somebody else's first round pick.
So I guess that's not an option. But you could trade to get someone's restricted free agent.
Yes, you could. You could do that.
So what about a name like Blake Wheeler?
Yeah, I don't know why they would be willing to part with Blake Wheeler.
American kid doesn't want to freeze his corn nuts off in in Winnipeg, but one of the coldest cities in North America.
It's true.
I mean, you could imagine some American kid sitting on the beach learning that he's going from Atlanta to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He might have dropped his cell phone in the pool. Excuse me? Get me out of here.
Well, dude.
Hey, who knows? There's no point in even trying to figure it out.
It's impossible to predict anymore what Doug Wilson's going to do because we've just been completely blindsided by the last two trades. So,
do you think Dan Boyle's listening, dude?
He could be listening, dude. I heard from Matt, the friend of the show, that Dan Boyle listened last week. I don't know if he listened to all of it, but if he listened this week, that means he's listened more than my mom has.
You think it's an accidental listening?
It could be. It's like, who the hell are these guys? Click, click. Where's the stop button? Where's the stop button?
You know, from our new seats, we could, you know, Dan, if you are listening, we're in section 212 this year.
Right.
At the teal and white game, if you are listening, just look up at 212 and just wink once for yes.
And then twice for no.
And twice for no. If you're not listening. Wait. What
question is he answering yes or no to?
He's, yes, I am listening. It should be two winks for it. Okay, let's start over.
Okay.
Dan, if you're listening, we want to get two winks and then like kind of like a funky chicken backskate. If you're listening. And if you do that, then we'll know you're listening.
Yeah.
Everybody else will know.
Right.
Okay.
Just be like, yeah, be like the secret handshake.
Yeah. or if you're listening, could wink three times.
How are we gonna spot this? And then
kick Thomas Greiss in the cup. Kick him in the cup.
Right. Yeah. Actually just kick him in the cup at all and we'll know you're listening. That could work.
Wink five times.
Dude.
And rub Ontario Ninomaki's bald head.
I think I'm going to stop now, dude.
Wink seven times.
think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.